This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. It was 2 years ago this February when George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin in Sanford, Florida. He was charged with second-degree murder. In July of this year, a Florida jury found Zimmerman not guilty of all charges. The case was polarizing for several reasons, race and gun rights certainly among them. The Stand Your Ground law in Florida has featured prominently in the public debate since the not guilty verdict, even as the law was not used in Zimmerman's defense. Doug Lyons of the South Florida Sun-Sentinel is along with us on this Florida Roundup, and Craig Pittman from the Tampa Bay Times joins us from Tampa Bay. Happy holidays to both of you, and Happy New Year, Doug and Craig.
Thank you.
Doug, we're 6 months or so separated from the verdict. What's the lasting message so far?
Well, I think the lasting message covered the two grounds that you, the two topics you mentioned, race and gun rights. Florida has now, thanks to Stand Your Ground, a burgeoning reputation for, I don't want to say being lax, but very liberal when it comes to gun laws and gun rights. I know the laws, you know, spread throughout 22 states, but Florida has become kind of like the poster child of the Second Amendment. And on the race question, I think there's still a lingering feeling about the criminal justice system and how well it works to protect the rights of black folk, particularly those who are victims of crime. Mm-hmm. And there are those, many of us, including myself, who believe that Trayvon Martin was a victim. And, you know, even though the courts exonerated Zimmerman, there's still this nagging feeling that race played a role in all of this in the criminal justice system.
Craig, as we're 6 months after the Zimmerman verdict from the Tampa Bay area, as Doug mentioned, let's tackle the gun rights issue first. Stand Your Ground is law in 22 states, including Florida. It's a litmus test for Stand Your Ground, though, even though it wasn't really used in the Zimmerman defense.
Well, but it was cited by the jurors in the decision that they made. They did talk about that. And I thought the really interesting thing is that amid all of the uproar over it, legislators held hearings and then said, you know what, we like the law just the way it is. We're not changing a word of it. We're not changing a comma or a period or anything.
Well, and to be frank, right, Craig, that they were holding a hearing over the summertime after the verdict on Stand Your Ground. And the opening statement by the chairman of the hearing was, we like the law. We're not going to change it. Now let's talk about changing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about guiding the discussion, right?
What's the Alice in Wonderland line? Sentence first, trial afterwards.
Right. But with that, you know, that is that certainly has been out there as we've moved on after the Zimmerman case and looked at Stand Your Ground here in Florida, and there continues to be legislative efforts to evolve, I guess is the best way, to evolve the Stand Your Ground law.
Well, to evolve it, although clearly the legislative leadership is not interested in touching this topic, especially with an election year coming up. The thing that I find really interesting, too, about the law and how it's been applied, we did a big project looking very in-depth at how it's been applied and found that disproportionately, whenever the victim of the crime is black, then Stand Your Ground is allowed to absolve the person who was the perpetrator of any sort of criminal charges, regardless of that person's race.
Yeah, and Doug, that is right to your point on the race mm-hmm. issue, which is an open question before the Trayvon Martin tragedy and clearly remains an open question now.
Well, now the new gun law tragedy apparently is taking place in Jacksonville, where it's not so much Stand Your Ground, although, and I'm drawing a blank on the woman's name, who fired the warning shot in the wall. Which has now opened the door for more legislation. The warning shot bill from Neil Comby up in Polk City. Stand Your Ground was a part of that case, or so she thought. She thought she had Stand Your Ground protection, but that didn't work out. And then she fell victim to a mandatory minimum sentence of 10-20 life, another gun law that is now back in the news because of that case.
So what's the state, do you think, as we move into 2014, another legislative session? Maybe there's not the political appetite to deal with Stand Your Ground, warning shot legislation, minimum mandatory sentences, for instance. But take a look at this, Doug. You know, how are the electorate, how are, you know, the voters supposed to look at this, let alone communities like the African American community, as Craig pointed out, have been seen as disproportionately involved in the stand your ground defenses.
Well, conventional wisdom says that the warning shot bill has some life and some chance to actually become law. The NRA is backing it, and now the public defenders of Florida are backing it as well. Stand your ground, any changes to that bill might be a little tougher. I know here in Fort Lauderdale, Chris Smith is one of the co-sponsors of a bill to try to tweak the law. It has a good chance of getting out of the Senate, but what was that guy's name in the House that said we're not changing one dang comma? I think he's got an uphill fight in the other chamber.
Craig Pittman with Tampa Bay Times. Some of the legislative effort that Doug is referring to would prohibit people who are the aggressors in confrontations from then using the stand your ground claim as immunity. Perhaps in response to at least the public debate that resulted in the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin case, if not the legal case, that when you saw the lawyers making the arguments back in the springtime.
Right. And again, I just think that what you're going to see is, since this is an election year, 2014, you're going to see legislators who don't want to touch anything that is likely to cost them any votes, no matter which way it goes. And the only way there would be some change is if there was some popular groundswell in order to get people to say, hey, we want to change. And at this point, we're just not seeing that.
Craig Pittman with the Tampa Bay Times, Doug Lyons with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Florida Roundup, our year-end wrap-up of 2013. We still have a news quiz to go, but we wanted to tackle Stand Your Ground as really one of the centerpiece news items in the state of Florida. It certainly focused the nation's eyes on Florida in the spring and summertime during the arguments in the George Zimmerman second-degree murder trial of Trayvon Martin. Zimmerman found not guilty of all charges in July of this year, a verdict that reverberated certainly in the African-American community here, Doug. The lesson, though, 6 months after the fact and moving into a new year for the African-American community remains what, especially concerning the criminal justice system?
Well, you know, as a kid growing up, I was given the rules, you know, as a young black teenager, certain things that you should do whenever you're in, whenever you come across a police officer, because the police officer has the badge and he has the gun. You know, unfortunately, those rules, as a parent, I'm telling my son those very same rules. You know, make sure that, you know, your hands are no quick moves, your hands are out. You know, you shouldn't have to do that. And I'm sure in other communities, they don't have those quote unquote rules that they abide by. You know, they know the police is officer friendly and, you know, protect and serve and all that. In the black community, that, you know, there's still that disconnect, and it's unfortunate.
Let me ask you about the criminal justice system. As you mentioned earlier, Doug, this was a case, of course, where the jury was just six people. I think that surprised some of us who are used to a 12-person jury with at least one or two alternates. This was a six-person jury, and it was a jury that did not have any African-Americans represented on it. How does that speak to, I guess, the legitimacy that the African-American community is looking back on this case and taking forward?
Well,
and the fairness of the jury selection system in Florida,
it
the accuracy of it.
Yeah, it raises concerns, you know, but the trial was in Sanford. I guess it would be a stretch to say that it was a jury of one's peers. But, you know, the jury is the one that sits down, and they're the ones to see all the information. They are the ones with the prosecution's case and the defense case. Yeah. So they, you know, it's easy to sit out here and kind of say, well, wow, this is, you know, the jury messed up, but we don't know. We weren't in the room. So you got to give the jury some credence, but there is that concern that, well, maybe there would have been other arguments raised in the jury room if there was some diversity, but, you know, decision stands.
And Craig, it does stand. And Craig, we have seen, you know, there was an initial effort back in July and August, some thought about maybe making these kinds of criminal cases, murder cases, for instance, mandatory that there be a 12-person jury that sits on it to widen the pool, for instance, for those that would hear these kinds of arguments.
Yes, but to do that, I think you'd be overcoming, you'd have to be overcoming years and years of legal precedents. And I just don't see that happening. Instead, I think you'll continue seeing that size jury for that kind of crime. If it had been charged as a first-degree murder, then obviously you would have had a much larger jury.
Yeah, and it was a second-degree murder case, yep. as we mentioned here. Stand your ground. 22 states have these kinds of this kind of law on its books. What does the future hold? What does the year hold for Stand Your Ground? We certainly, Craig, have heard you in regards to Florida and the political appetite during an election year, but you're seeing an effort to expand and evolve Stand Your Ground in many states here as they look at how Stand Your Ground has evolved even in the months after the George Zimmerman not guilty verdict.
Right, and the other interesting thing is that one of the main groups that was pushing that was the American Legislative Exchange Council, the Koch brothers funded group that was distributing all of these various pieces of legislation to different state legislatures on different issues, and this was one of them. And the blowback, some of the blowback from the Trayvon Martin killing and the Zimmerman trial, in the aftermath of that, some of the corporate sponsors of ALEC said, you know what, we don't want to be associated with this anymore. Mm-hmm. And so they dropped their funding of ALEC, and it is now hurting financially and has been trying to recruit new membership. So that has been one aspect in which, you know, there has been a sort of a shrinking away from Stand Your Ground and trying to being involved in that sort of controversy. But as far as the legislatures themselves taking action, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I agree with you, Craig. There was a case in Ocala, which is the home of the lawmaker who actually sponsors Stand Your Ground, and he raised a concern that the prosecutor's office was not doing their job in determining, you know, going after the right cases. He has no problems with Stand Your Ground, and I agree with that. I think Stand Your Ground would pretty much, you know, go unchallenged.
Well, let me expand it beyond Stand Your Ground to Second Amendment, because we also have seen some legislative efforts to expand carry permits, for instance, in the state of Florida, to make certain permits easier to get, as easy to get, for instance, as a license plate tag is what the latest line has been here. Doug, what kind of appetite? Florida has shown a significant appetite for Second Amendment gun rights as a state, but these efforts to expand gun rights at a state level of success?
There's I don't see any political consequences for any politician
to
in Florida
them, right?
to support the Second Amendment. I mean, I once wrote in a column that the Second Amendment in some cases is more important than the Ten Commandments. It you know, politically, I mean, that's one of the safest grounds you can have in Florida, is to be a supporter of the Second Amendment and you know, following the NRA and the laws that they espouse. I wish I could see that that something would change, but you know, I don't see it. I think it'll be easier to obtain a gun permit and the use of firearms.
And some of that will be dictated, of course, to the outcome of the November election for governor and for the state house here in Florida. That's Doug Lyons with South Florida Sun Sentinel. Craig Pittman along with us as well at the Tampa Bay Times. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Florida Roundup, our year in review 2013, taking a look back, of course, at the big stories in South Florida, statewide and nationwide. Still to come on our program, we will test your knowledge of 2013 with our first annual news quiz. This is the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. The year in review 2013, looking at it with the help of our Public Insight Network members for a little bit of a news quiz. Doug Lyons with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Craig Pittman with the Tampa Bay Times, and Alicia Zuckerman with WLRN Miami Herald News along with us. Happy New Year again to everybody. Our online discussion and quiz also happening. Join us on the World Wide Web at WLRN.org and also tweet us using the call sign at WLRN. So our news quiz here, we've got five questions, and we are going to read these news questions and play perhaps an audio clue to help out our listener. If you get at least three right, you'll be invited to come to the studios, meet the staff, watch the show in the making, and all the fun that is making radio. So we say hello first to our contestant, Sonia Lewis from Miami, a Public Insight Network member here at WLRN Miami Herald News. Sonia, happy holidays and happy new year.
Thank you. Same to you.
So you're all set for this news quiz now, right?
Yes.
You've been listening every week to the Florida Roundup for the past 51 weeks, so you're good to go?
I'm good to go.
All right. You've got your crib sheet out, though, too, right? It's okay to use notes. This is an open book test, all right?
No, I don't have a crib sheet.
All right. Here we go, Sonia. We will start with question number one. A group of entrepreneurs in Hialeah were shut down for lack of permits after undertaking what biblical task?
Pass on that one. I don't remember.
I'll give you a clue, Sonia. Think in terms of twos.
In terms of?
Twos.
Think in twos.
Honestly, I don't remember.
Well, this group of entrepreneurs, some industrious fellows and ladies in Hialeah, wanted to build an ark in Hialeah, but they were shut down because they ran across what tends to happen when you're trying to build things in South Florida, local regulations.
and permits.
That is absolutely right. They were trying to build an ark.
South Florida's rainy season is notoriously, well, rainy. Maybe not enough to launch an ark, but a group of enthusiastic shipwrights near Miami is tackling the monumental task of recreating Noah's famous ark. From member station WLRN, Kenny Malone got a firsthand look at the boat, and he discovered the Florida project isn't the only ark around.
I'm standing in unincorporated Miami-Dade County in the middle of nowhere. There's not a building in sight. But there is a very, very large boat under construction. Just outside Hialeah, not far from the Everglades, sits 1/10 of a full-scale Noah's Ark. So this is all wood, so let me just... Imagine a 150-foot-long bathtub made of wood. You start to get the idea. In front is a cement elephant sculpture, a sign of the bigger and hopefully more lifelike things to come. Says Carolina Peralta.
We are trying to develop this area. This is going to be like a park. This is going to be our Disney in Miami.
Our Kenny Malone there reporting about the entrepreneurs in Hialeah in 2013 that wanted to build an ark, were in the process, Doug, of building this ark, had the wood, had the power tools, had the design, and then, of course, they ran into regulations and the lack of permits.
Yeah, stuff happens. you know, when I first saw this, I thought, well, maybe they read that Rolling Stone article that said basically that Miami would be the new Atlantis in 50 years, so they'd be prepared. But I had no idea that they were thinking about a theme park. That's so Florida.
Yeah, that is so Florida. That's exactly what it is.
So, Sonia, if on your list in 2014 was to come visit the Ark in Hialeah, Disney in Miami, unfortunately, shut down for the lack of permits.
We're sorry for you.
All right, question number two here on our news quiz on WLRN with Sonia Lewis from Miami. Sonia, here we go. All right, little international intrigue here, okay? Mm-hmm. In which country was former Venezuela dictator Hugo Chavez recovering from cancer surgery during his scheduled inauguration?
In Cuba.
In Cuba.
All right.
That is correct. 1 point for Sonia. Well done. Of course, this year was the year that also Chavez passed away, Latin American dictator, no longer. Lots of political intrigue, Alicia, when it comes to Venezuela. And we did see some significant celebrations, of course, here in Florida with Chavez's passing.
We have a very big Venezuelan population here.
Absolutely, Sonia.
We do, absolutely. No, and so, you know, we saw the relationship between Venezuela and Cuba is obviously a close one, and Chavez and Castro had this kind of deep and abiding friendship. Castro was something of a mentor to Chavez. But Chavez is, you know, the reason why a lot of the Venezuelan community that lives here is here to begin with.
Yep.
And so by default, Castro is sort of responsible for a fair amount of economic development.
Absolutely.
In South Florida. I'm sure that he would not want that to be the case, but that is the sort of default thing that happened as a result of Chavez taking power.
Yeah, it's no secret that certainly within the economic development community in South Florida, two names that are responsible for some significant capital investment and capital flows through the past generation have been Chavez and Castro.
It's ironic.
South Florida. Yeah, it is. All right, our news quiz here, Sonia. Ready? You've got one correct answer so far. So here we go. Question number three. A federal probe into the company Allied Veterans of the World in Florida led to the resignation of which state official?
The name escapes me. I read the article.
You want a hint?
Yes.
Internet cafes.
Internet cafes, Allied Veterans of the World, a resignation of this state official.
Clearly, my name being the top elected official with the title that I had bring sensational stories, and it would have detracted from the governor doing his work, his legislative agenda, and going into his political campaign.
All right, a top elected official.
The lieutenant governor, was it?
Lieutenant governor, there you go. That is absolutely right. The former lieutenant governor, Jennifer Carroll,
yes,
caught up because of a marketing relationship that she had with Allied Veterans of the World involved with these internet cafes. Craig, this was a bit of a political a brew in the middle of the year, but it died quickly with her resignation.
Yes, and it's interesting that the governor has yet to appoint anyone to replace her. I think a great idea would be to have a different lieutenant governor every week. And, you know, just let people, kind of like, you know, you pick somebody new to throw out the first pitch at every baseball game, so why not have a new lieutenant governor every week? And,
why do we need a lieutenant governor? We functioned without one so far.
Let's see when Governor Scott comes up with his budget if he's got a line item on the personnel that reds out the lieutenant governor salary and benefits, right?
No, we're supposed to let people get back to work, not supposed to.
That's right. The other silly thing about all of this, Doug, was because of this internet cafe and how they were awarding clients of essentially, quote unquote, buying or renting internet time at these cafes. There was a lawsuit filed that said, well, the Florida State Legislature acted so quickly against these Florida internet cafes that they banned the use of smartphones and tablets and any internet connected device because it could be used to display a gaming website.
Well, not only that, but I live in a part of Palm Beach County where there's still people who are upset of the other fallout where they just shut down these internet cafes. Yeah. And there are a lot of seniors and elderly people who, you know, use those venues as places to meet and just spend some time and have some fun. But that's gone.
Yeah, it really cut into the social life of a lot of senior citizens.
We've got Sonia Lewis on our line, a Public Insight Network member here at WLRN Miami Herald News, our first annual year-end news quiz. She's got two right so far out of the five questions total here. So let's go on to question number four. Sonia, all set? You're doing well.
Yes.
All right. Earlier this year, what name did Broward Commissioner Chip LaMarca want to change Broward County to?
Hint.
How about a hint?
Yes, I'd like a hint.
Alicia?
It's not Fort, but it's...
It would be renamed for the major city in Broward County.
Which Lauderdale?
Lauderdale County. There we go. All right, we'll give that away. Doug, you know, Miami-Dade did it not too long ago. I mean, it was several years ago, certainly. But again, idea came up and went away pretty quickly.
Well, with apologies to Napoleon Bonaparte Broward, who I don't think too many people remember. He used to be a governor of Florida. I mean, people know Fort Lauderdale. I mean, that is a standout city. There was a movie with Beach Blanket
Bingo, or something.
Yeah. I mean, but it's an iconic.
Where the boys are.
That's the one I was looking for.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that people outside of Broward County know Fort Lauderdale. They don't know Broward.
Right. There was somebody in one of the pieces that we ran earlier in the year saying, you know, when I travel around the country and I say I'm from Broward, people look at me like they have no idea where I'm from. On the other hand, though, because Fort Lauderdale is associated with spring break or was for a long time associated with a kind of wild spring break party atmosphere, there were some people who in Broward who said, no, I don't want to be called Lauderdale County. I don't want that to be the representative thing about the place where I live.
Right. It could actually be a good thing to say, oh, no, I'm I'm not from there. I'm from Broward County. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Does that carry any weight in the golf area there, Craig?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, we had the movie Spring Breakers was actually filmed here, so we may be in the same boat pretty soon.
A much more contemporary look at Spring Break.
Yes,
and
yes.
Shall we say
more guns involved.
A more graphic look at Spring Break, a 21st century look at Spring Break. All right, let's continue on. Our fifth and final question, Sonia. You're doing great. You've got three right so far, so this one will put you clearly in the win column. Here it goes. After being featured on the cover of Time magazine, which Florida politician said on Twitter, quote, "There is only one savior, and it is not me."
Oh, man. I just read that article not too long ago.
You can picture picture the cover picture, can't you?
I didn't buy the magazine. Can I ask for a hint?
It is one of the U.S. senators in the state of Florida. Marco Rubio was on the cover of Time magazine and said on Twitter, "There is only one savior, and it is not me." And Craig, this was in direct response, obviously, to the headline that Time magazine used, but also all of the hope, perhaps, and potential that has been heaped on Senator Rubio on the part of the Republican Party.
Right. They were referring to him as basically being the savior of the party because of his Hispanic heritage, that he could reach out to groups that the GOP has been having problems connecting with. But lately these days, I think the senator is having trouble connecting with some of the people in his own party since he signed up for Obamacare and took the subsidy. They're not quite as happy with him.
I was going to say, I think he wishes he could get the cover of Time magazine.
At least a bottle of water.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He has had a bad year, I mean, to say the least.
I mean, the fall has been pretty profound. Everybody was talking about him, obviously, as the savior of the party, and it's been very quiet on the Rubio front.
That said, if you're going to fall and fail fast, because, you know, he doesn't have an election still for another couple of years.
That's an excellent point,
And we'll see which election it is that we're talking
Maybe
about.
Maybe it's all part of the strategy. Maybe he's going to emerge as a centrist or pull a Crist, and who knows?
Precisely. I think he just does not want to be put on a pedestal that he has to climb down off when they're failures. Mm-hmm.
Sonia Lewis, 4 out of 5 right in our first annual WLRN Miami Herald year-end news quiz. Sonia, we look forward to seeing you here at the station in the months ahead. Thanks so much for playing here on the news quiz. You can play along as well. Join us online at WLRN.org. Tweet us as well at WLRN is that call sign. It is Tom Hudson with the Florida Roundup. We've got Craig Pittman along with us from the Tampa Bay Times, Doug Lyons from South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Alicia Zuckerman from WLRN Miami Herald News. We've got another Public Insight Network member along with us. Ed Gugliotta is here. Ed, welcome to the program and Happy New Year.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year to you, too. Thank you.
It's great to have you join us. You've got your crib sheet out, right?
I think so.
He's got a stack of newspapers and magazines, and he's been listening online to the old Florida Roundups to get prepared for this. Here we go. Question number one, Ed. Which three Miami-Dade mayors were arrested for corruption this year?
Miami-Dade mayors arrested.
A Miami-Dade city mayors, which ones were arrested? We're looking for three cities within Miami-Dade whose mayors were arrested this year for corruption.
I know of a few that have had a lot of problem between them, but arrested, as a matter of fact, can I get a hint?
One of them is a community in far south Dade County.
Homestead.
All right, we'll take Homestead. Absolutely. We got two more to go for a full correct answer here, Ed. But we will take one more for a partial answer.
I knew of one that had like an Italian name, Pizzi.
Yeah. You've got the name. Now, which community? Which community?
Christ, community.
Miami is in the name of the community.
Miami Lakes.
There you go.
Very good.
Right, we'll give that to you. Sweetwater was the third. The county mayors of Miami Lakes, Sweetwater, and Homestead all arrested on corruption this year. We saw the perp walks, Alicia. We saw the sting operations that led them out of their offices.
You know, I've been thinking about this. This is a very, we hear a lot like, this is so Florida. This is so South Florida. I wonder if that's true. I mean, Tom, you've spent some time in Chicago.
Another city known for political corruption.
What about New Orleans? What about Detroit? Like, is it really crazier here than it is in some other parts of the country? I mean, it does feel like it is. It certainly feels in our everyday life like it's...
My sense is this. There's a large number of smaller communities here. Yes, there's large cities, but the city of Miami, for instance, is about 500,000 people. Fort Lauderdale is a large city, but you've got a lot of these other villages and cities around. So more population, more opportunity. Fact is, in all of this, we know, Craig, you certainly know it in the Tampa Bay area. Doug, you know it covering politics here for almost 20 years. Fraud is a fact of life. It's not a way of life. And those who do make it a way of life wound up coming down and getting crushed under the boot of law.
Yeah, I don't know. It's in our DNA. There's just something special about the way we do it in Florida. You're right. Other communities have problems with crime and fraud, but nobody does it like Florida.
Ed Gugliotta. All right, Ed, let's go to question number two. We're staying with political corruption here. It's our theme. That's the category we're in for our news quiz. Before Miami Lakes Mayor Michael Pizzi got arrested, he was going to duke it out in a mixed martial arts battle with the mayor of which city?
Marshall, I was getting into trouble with another one from another city.
In fact, this was a fundraiser. This was being advertised. It was a fundraiser for some nonprofits. This was going to be a big event for these two communities where the mayors decided to literally duke it out in the squared circle.
And we were planning to send a reporter.
Mm-hmm. This was going to be a big event.
Was it up north?
It was a neighboring city to Miami Lakes.
Miami Springs, I guess, something like this.
No, not Miami Springs. The mayor of Hialeah. And the mayor of Miami Lakes were set to duke it out in a mixed martial arts arena for nonprofit, for benefit, Alicia. But if there isn't anything that speaks of Miami, Dade County, South Florida politics, it would be an arranged mixed martial arts contest.
I was really, frankly, very disappointed that this didn't happen. I thought it would have made great radio. We were all set to cover it and bring it to you, our listeners. Carlos Hernandez, the mayor of Hialeah, said he was so disappointed that this didn't happen. He told the Miami Herald that he felt like he was a bride left at the altar.
Maybe the guys from Doral could do the same, right?
but not only that, he still wants to do this, and he says, well, if it doesn't work out with the former mayor of Miami Lakes, then maybe another mayor will step forward.
Well, did he already buy the costume? He just didn't want it to go to waste.
he's done all the training, you know, all the moves.
I was going to say, clearly, right? He was pumped.
Yeah, that's right.
Who's going to have the black belt?
Yeah. All right, Ed, let's get some right answers here if we can. We've got to move on to question number three.
Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, America, one today. One sun rose on us today, kindled over our shores, peeking over the Smokies, greeting the faces of the Great Lakes, spreading a simple truth across the Great Plains, then charging across the Rockies.
That is a Miami-raised writer and poet who was the presidential inaugural poet this year for President Barack Obama. All right, Ed, what is his name?
Well, that's a tough one. Never heard of that.
All right, we can give you a hint. He was it's actually a two-part hint. He was the first Hispanic inaugural poet for a presidential inauguration. And think in terms of white.
Huh. Translation of the English word white.
Okay, Blanco, obviously.
Okay, you got it right.
There we go.
Richard Blanco,
exactly. This was quite something to behold, certainly for the poet community here. You remember that now, Ed?
January 21st.
Yeah. Now you know the date.
There you go. There you go. That's right.
Bonus points.
The
for
second
that.
Inauguration of President Obama,
yeah,
having a Miami-raised writer there to deliver the inaugural poem. quite a moment certainly to behold. All right, let's move on. Question number four here. You've got one right, two wrong, Ed, in our news quiz. We have a clip from our Remix the News challenge from this past summer on Sun Life Stadium renovations.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell about
the Miami Dolphins, hundreds of millions of dollars hosting a Super Bowl.
For the modernized facility, public investment. Dolphins, public investment.
All right, aside from the Beastie Boys there, Ed, who was the speaker on the Sun Life Stadium renovation plan?
There was a lot of people talking about that. I remember that, but speaker, clue.
The former CEO of the Miami Dolphins, Mike D, referred to there in the famous Beastie Boys clip. Mike D was speaking there. He was the one that was kind of the public face, Doug, of the plan to renovate Dolphin Stadium, Sun Life Stadium, a plan that never made it to the voters.
Well, it might have if... Unfortunately, Steve, the owner, became the public face in Tallahassee, and that face didn't go over very well with the lawmakers when he tried to get state money to help with help renovate the stadium.
And Miami-Dade County was up for taking some of the public money. The state, obviously, not so much. The state legislature, Craig, rejecting $50 billion in federal funds, rather rejecting the idea to move forward with the plan, and it kind of just stopped dead in the water, Doug.
Yes, I mean, to the point where even after the legislature had gone, after session was over, I mean, it was still the talk, the conversation among the Senate president and the House speaker.
They didn't want to touch it.
They did not get a good vibe from Steve.
Craig,
Ross.
It became a South Florida issue, not a Florida issue.
Right. Yeah. But I, you know, you have to wonder, are there any sports team owners who are liked by the public at this point? I'm not sure there are any.
Not even the Heat guy?
Not even. Well, maybe the Heat. Maybe tolerated. Maybe the Heat ownership is tolerated. I think the management is well-liked, but maybe the ownership is tolerated. All right, Ed, come on. Let's get one more across the finish line here. Question number five. While Miami-Dade was up for taking some public money, the state didn't want to. The state legislature rejecting $50 billion in federal funds intended to expand what health care program?
Healthcare program, Miami Take healthcare program.
This was a program that the state decided not to expand.
Was it maybe the Jackson Hospital?
Medicaid. It was Medicaid. This was wrapped up, of course, in the Affordable Care Act plan, the Obamacare, and this was money that the federal government, Doug, was intending to dangle in front of states to expand the Medicaid program, which, of course, is designed for low-income Americans.
You know, it's funny.
There you go.
It's funny that in some states with Republican governors, they took the money, and they're quite happy that they did. The Florida legislature, I think we missed the first installment, and we might miss the second installment.
Yep. Ed, because of the record so far, you've got one right. We are going to give you a quick bonus question. Are you ready for the bonus question?
You send it over.
It's an all-in bonus question here, Ed. Here we go. A Miami-Dade police detective provided narcotics detector dogs... and what else to help his daughter's fourth grade science project?
God, I got the tough one.
This is a tough one, but you got to think it's so Florida. A Miami-Dade police detective providing narcotic detector dogs. And what else for his daughter's fourth grade science project? Something that the dogs may have been detecting.
Maybe he provided what is coke, dope, marijuana.
Cocaine. That's right. Because nothing says fourth grade science project. Cocaine and canines.
It would enhance their IQ.
Something like that. Ed Gugliotta from Miami Public Insight Network. Yeah, the bonus question was absolutely right. Congratulations, Ed. Have a great New Year. Stay tuned. More to come on the Florida Roundup here in the 2013 Year in Review, the Listener Quiz. This is the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. A little bit different here today at the end of the year. We want to celebrate the year, talk about the news that was, certainly, and give some listeners a chance to show us, quite frankly, how closely they've been paying attention to the headlines that come across each and every day here at WLRN. Doug Lyons along with us from South Florida Sun Sentinel, Craig Pittman still with us from the Tampa Bay Times, and Alicia Zuckerman with WLRN Miami Herald News. And we've got Evelyn Dow now along with us from our Public Insight Network on WLRN Miami Herald News. Evelyn, happy holidays and happy new year.
Happy holidays to you.
Are you all set for the news quiz here today?
As one could be, I guess.
All right, I've got five questions for you, and if necessary, we've got two bonuses, and I got to say, the two bonus questions are kind of out there, but I know you've been paying close attention to the Florida Roundup and WLRN throughout the year,
well,
so I've got good confidence here, Evelyn.
Some days I do, and some days I don't.
All right, well, hopefully the questions about
you're
the
honest
news stories are the days that you are paying
well,
attention.
Well, let's hope they are.
All right, let's begin. Evelyn Dow, our WLRN Miami Herald News Quiz for 2013, the year that was. Let's begin with this.
There's been definitely white smoke. You join us at an extraordinary time, just a minute or so after that first puff of white smoke emerged from that little stovepipe chimney. The crowds have been turning up all afternoon, eager not to miss the moment.
Now, that moment was back in March. You heard it there from the BBC. That happened at the Vatican when a cardinal was named as the next pope. Now, the question here, Evelyn, is this. Pope Francis is the first pope of the New World. Which country is he from?
From somewhere in South America.
Yeah, somewhere in South America. We've narrowed
Brazil,
it down to the
think?
Continent. Not Brazil. We'll give you a second guess.
You want a hint?
Yes.
Don't cry for me.
Oh, Argentina.
There you go. There you go. There you go. Well done, Evelyn.
Okay.
Well done. Well done. Now,
thank you for the hint.
What was interesting about this, many things were interesting about this, certainly, let's be said, about what he's been doing as Pope over the past several months since he was ordained here. But this really was seen as a people's Pope. Doug, you know, he's talked about a number of different cultural and social issues that previous popes and the Catholic Church had been very reticent to talk about publicly.
I guess still hiding their heads about.
That's true.
I guess by today's standard, this pope would be classified as a moderate. I mean,
I'd say he's definitely a moderate.
He's put
and he has a lot of common sense too. Seems like
he does, and he's brought an issue of poverty, you know, to the forefront, which his predecessors
And that's a real big point here, Evelyn. What Pope Francis has done is he's spoken openly and directly about economics, about global economics, and he's speaking from a point, obviously, of personal reflection and personal experience, given the country from which he hails.
Well, I don't know of any country in the world where you couldn't speak honestly and forthrightly about poverty.
Truer words have not
been
spoken.
We've got a lot of it here, and we continue to bill ourselves as the richest country in the world, which we are not.
we are the richest country in the world in terms of our economic output, but we certainly have significant disparities in terms of income throughout the United States. All right, here we go.
Boy.
Let's move on to question number two. You've got one right, Evelyn. You've done very, very well here. Here we go. Question number two. This year marked the first time Florida finally banned texting while driving, but it's hard to get a ticket for this because it's only a blank offense. Fill in the blank.
I have no idea.
It's not a primary offense, but
it's a secondary offense.
That's absolutely right. And Craig, that's a big difference between being a primary offense while texting and a secondary offense.
Right. It means they can't pull you over just for that thing. It's if they pull you over because you're doing something else.
Well, they should pull you over for that.
I think that's a very popular sentiment, especially if you've seen those very effective TV ads about things that happen while people are texting and the crashes and the tragedy that results.
I have seen people reading a book.
There you go. Yeah. Well, shaving, putting makeup on, eating, all of those things. But all of those things predates texting. For some reason, texting is one that really sticks for a number of us. Well, Alicia, go ahead.
I mean, it's an incredible, it's an incredible form of distracted driving.
It's on par with drunk driving.
Yeah, I mean, it's like having a conversation.
It's even distracted walking.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know,
people bump into other people when they're texting on the street.
Well, no, absolutely. I've seen that too. But, you know, Ariana Prothero was our reporter who did a lot of the reporting on the texting while driving ban. And she and I were on the MacArthur Causeway in the middle of her reporting, when she was sort of in the middle of reporting out this story. And there was a lot of traffic. So it was moving slowly enough that we could see into the other cars. Mm-hmm. And we were looking into all of the other cars to the left and to the right of us. And I would say about half of the drivers, really about half, we were counting.
Yeah.
Were maybe more.
Texting, reading emails or something else.
And it's no joke. It is so dangerous.
Yeah. Oh,
sure. I'm not surprised. And it is terribly, terribly dangerous.
And if Florida had better mass transit, we would not have that issue as much, I think.
That's right. They could sit on mass transit and text to their heart's content.
Exactly. But because so much of Florida is covered in roads and not any sort of mass transit, people are having to do all kinds of things in the car. My favorite one, of course, is the lady who was driving down to the Keys for a date with her boyfriend and was attempting to shave a sensitive area.
It didn't
go well.
No.
It didn't end well.
Oh, right.
That's a brave woman.
Speaking of the Keys, but moving the shaving along here, Diana Nyad made news for swimming from Cuba to Key West. This is question number three here, Evelyn. Question number three. This summer, a man made news for traveling that distance from Cuba to Key West via what means? He didn't swim.
In a kayak?
Boy, an awfully close answer, but no, on a paddleboard. On a paddleboard.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, I wouldn't have thought.
Yes, a paddleboard. It really quite these feats of strength that we saw
That's
this
a
year.
Tremendous feat of strength.
But not as impressive as Diana Nyad.
Not quite as impressive. Still very impressive.
No, impressive. I couldn't do
it. But Diana Nyad really broke the record book and probably threw it away. I mean, the kind of stick-to-itiveness. This was try number, which
I
one?
Think it was five, I think.
Five. And all the jellyfish that she had to swim through.
She's a woman in her 60s. She's
and she didn't swim. She gave up swimming for 30 years.
She got stung a lot of times.
Gave up.
She gave up at the end because she couldn't. She really couldn't.
During the previous swims.
Yeah. Right. But she came back after 30 years out of the pool. She came back, and really, what an inspirational story. Yeah. And you had a chance to talk to her, of course, just a few days after.
I talked to her just a couple days after. Yeah. And she, you know, one of the things that's so funny that she said, I thought was both funny and amazing, was that she said, you know, I've done this, I'm not going to do another swim like this, but, you know, maybe my next thing is I'm going to New York and I'm going to swim 48 hours in a pool for charity for the Hurricane Sandy victims.
Wow.
So, and she did, you know, there was a webcam and you could watch it live.
Yep,
she swam for 48 hours. Actually, it was a quite cold day, too, in an outdoor pool they set up in Midtown.
Now doing a paddleboard in a lap pool may be a lot different, though. So, you know, maybe we'll sign up for that.
That would be a lot different.
I noticed
doing
that
a paddleboard on the ocean, that's a...
Yeah, but now I noticed that the folks in Key West...
incredibly skilled, incredibly lucky.
The folks in Key West, they want to build a statue to Diana Nyad, not to the paddleboard guy.
Well said. All right, Evelyn Dow, our WLR and Miami Herald Public Insight Network news quiz taker here along with us. You're doing pretty well here. Let's go on to question number four. At the memorial late this year for Nelson Mandela in South Africa, President Obama's greeting to which national leader drew attention? President Obama was going up to the stage to speak, to give his eulogy, and he shook hands with which national leader, causing a bit of a rub, certainly here in South Florida.
I don't remember.
This was Raul Castro. Raul Castro.
Oh, that's correct. In fact, I saw it. I saw it on the television.
Yep, it was a fleeting moment, Doug. It was only, hold on, Evelyn, it was only 10 seconds long, Doug, but it did have a little bit longer of a lifespan.
It was the handshake scene around the world, particularly around Latin America. I don't know what the president could have done. I mean, if he had snubbed him, that would have been an international incident. And given the setting, I mean, this was Nelson Mandela's funeral.
That's right.
I think the president did the appropriate thing.
Well, maybe he should have hugged him. That certainly didn't end
well, yeah.
well for Charlie Crist.
I think the line is.
It could have destroyed Castro.
All right, Evelyn, here we go. Last question. Question number 5 on our news quiz. The Keys, the Florida Keys, recently considered the use of drones for what distinct challenge to South Florida living? Drones, unmanned aircraft.
I know what drones are.
Hint?
Fighting distinct challenges. Alicia, a hint, please.
It's a very itchy situation.
They're piss.
I don't know.
Mosquito eradication.
Mosquitoes. Oh,
mosquitoes. As every good party in South Florida, we have to end it with mosquitoes. We have to end it with mosquitoes. Evelyn Dow, Public Insight Network here on WLRN Miami Herald. Thank you so much for playing, Evelyn. You did very, very well. Happy New Year and happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you and have a good New Year.
You as well. Thanks for listening. Doug Lyons with South Florida Sun Sentinel, Craig Pittman with the Tampa Bay Times, and Alicia Zuckerman with WLRN Miami Herald News. Happy New Year to each of you. May
Thank
the
you.
New Year be itch-free for all of us here in the Sunshine
Thank
State.
You.
We always enjoy hearing from you as well online at WLRN.org. This is the Florida Roundup here on WLRN at the end of 2013. Thank you so much for listening throughout the year. We look forward to a happy and healthy New Year.